Neukölln, legendary district of Berlin with a population of over 320,000, home to a very diverse and increasingly hip population with vast connections into the arts, technology, and unique ideas that occasionally make a big splash heard around the world. There is a lot going on here, and much being said about what many refer to as the front lines of gentrification in the year 2015. Now, you may think you've heard this story before, but don't judge too quickly. There is much more to this story than a few hipsters opening a microbrewery, though we do have that as well. From Wikimedia Deutschland, I'm Mark von Secker-Renderu, and this is Source Code Berlin. Today on the program, we dive into the streets of Neukölln with the help of three different voices: the historian, the writer, and the radio producer. That is to say, Caroline Marburger of Berlin Locals Tours, Paul Hawkins of Hencewise.com, and Christian Grasse of KeatsRadio.org. Each brings with them their own experience working and living in Neukölln, but perhaps even more interesting, as professional observers. Caroline Marburger is a historian and a tour guide with Berlin Locals. She spends much of her time outdoors somewhere in Berlin, leading groups of tourists around. She's also a former resident of Neukölln, who has watched the transformation over the past 10 years. When I reached out to her to meet me somewhere in Neukölln for the podcast, she agreed to meet and tell me some stories, and the place where we started on a cold winter's day, in front of the former Sudhaus Kindle Brewery, a tall, dark brown, industrial-looking building, looking fresh from the 1930s, crammed in between a big residential construction project and a supermarket. And towards the main avenue, as we stand there in the cold, we have this great view of massive concrete housing structures that look like a design idea from the 1970s, a bad design idea. A reminder that not all of Neukölln looks hip and chic.
It's because it's part of the history what Neukölln was, namely a very poor workers' quarter that in the highest times of economical downfall of the 20s, still the one thing that worked was beer. So very Berlin and very German in that regard. So they built this amazing brewery at the time, and it was thriving and one of the most famous of its time. At the same time, now they closed it in 2005 only. So it's a rather late closed down part. Same hand, very typical for Berlin, those former industrial quarters that now are deserted. And there was, I think, a decade at least of discussions what to do with it, how to develop it in to help the neighborhood. And surprisingly, it was a Swiss couple that came to rescue after they wanted to make it into a sort of university campus that was thrown out as an idea. And they at least bought two sections, the former brewery, the old part, and the boiler house, and want to make it into a house for contemporary art. And they actually worked together with the community to also open it up to the Kiez, as we say in Berlin, for the neighborhood, and to work in with children and something like that. And at the same time, the former brewery, the cellar, is now used by the rather popular and really good microbrewery called Rollberger. Which that's the smell that we smell right now, the brewery actually. And at the same time, they are still discussing the many spaces that the whole, because it's 5 hectares of land that this whole brewery belongs to. And they are still discussing many of those places, how they will be used. So now you have the Schwutz now in there, which is one of the most famous, or the most famous, gay club that moved from Kreuzberg, its former location, to here. And so there are many places that still await their real destiny and how the current community will use it.
Now let's get it out of the way right now. The word gentrification.
Here it's sort of the G word sort of has sets everyone in horror because they see it happening even though it hasn't actually happened yet. But it's in the process of happening, particularly here right now, and it's probably happening faster than in any other of the districts that are usually known to be gentrified already, like Prenzlauer Berg and Kreuzberg. Neukölln is still on the verge of it. And so many of what sociology would term as the pioneers of gentrification, so those youngsters, students that can afford to share a flat, which was formerly owned by one family, they are, of course, the ones complaining about it most. Yeah. While those that actually suffer from it might not even know the word or might actually not be the ones speaking out. So indeed, you have in Neukölln, it's, I would say, in a way, at least it seems to me, the most extreme, because it's very quick. And it sort of happens to a lot of people that have to move away. And Berlin was always famous for its lot of the space it had, because it was so shrunken in population that you always had empty spaces that they might not be the ones that you wanted to live in, but you could still move and they were decent enough. And that's now changed. So on that side, you see that tension arise sort of not right here, but they are just moved outside of Neukölln, however, still remaining close by. And of course, as we discussed it earlier, the explosion of rents is hardly anywhere more extreme than in Neukölln.
Extreme is one word for it, though the estimations vary. A recent piece in the Berliner Morgenpost talks about some parts of Neukölln where rents have gone up 80% in the last 5 years alone.
Some spaces that are renovated and then they can make this incredible change to the rent, because usually our rent control does not allow that, but there are certain ways around it. So it can happen that indeed, instead of the, what I think has become rather common is that by now in Berlin, rents are like 20, 30, 40% higher than they were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And Neukölln has seen some extreme explosions, because of course that has also to do with how incredibly cheap compared to other metropolis Berlin sort of is. But the problem is that the Berliner is not the one to afford that. It is the ones that come from elsewhere that can, of course, easily afford it because they have a completely different income.
Paul Hawkins is a comedy writer originally from the UK, but now based in Neukölln since 2013. He doesn't claim to know all the answers about what is happening to the neighborhood. He doesn't even see his own example as typical, but he does see a never-ending trove of stories all around him.
I knew someone who lived on the street that I moved to, and through a sort of friend of a friend of a friend, she knew a cleaner whose wife knew a landlord who had a flat that came free. And at this point, I didn't know anything really about the rental market in Berlin or how hard it was to find a flat. And then suddenly someone offered me a free flat and they said, just turn up. You don't need any documents. You just give this guy a call. And then I met him, and 5 minutes later, I had the keys in my hand, signed the contract, didn't exchange any papers or any details. The guy didn't even really know my second name. And suddenly, I just had a flat in Neukölln. And then it would later turn out that the reason I didn't have to give him any documents was he was a complete crook, and no one in the building had to give him any documents, which made my neighbors quite an amusing and interesting assortment of Neukölln characters, let's say. So I went there to visit it, and there was just a small Einzimmerwohnung, one room flat. And I talked to the landlord for really a few minutes, exchanging baffling small talk in a mixture of bad German and bad English, and he was even using some Latin words at some point, just as we were really trying to bridge the communication gap with whatever party we could find. He really just gave me this flat straight out of the blue, and then it was really weeks or months before I would actually find out how hard it was to find a flat in Berlin, and how normally you have to have so many documents and you have to have guarantees and rental contracts and Schufa documents. And I really had none of these as a sort of, you know, vaguely traveling writer of no fixed income. On paper, I looked terrible and the last person you would give a flat to. But this guy just, I think he just saw foreigner, new Berlin, and that I would pay the new price, if you like, for the flat. And so at the time, I really didn't realize that. I didn't even realize I was kind of moving into a gentrification debate. This house was really on the front line of what you might call the gentrification debate. And I mean, and what was interesting about it, I think, was really that in the year I was there, how much it changed. Like it started off as a lot of people in sort of, you know, I guess you would say social housing conditions. My next door neighbor was like a raging alcoholic who we would drink in the afternoon together. And yeah, I was like, had 9 fingers, had a finger missing. And on the first morning I was there, he came around and asked me to photocopy a picture of him holding an assault rifle. Just would get demonic drunk every day. There was a prostitute working in the building. There was people like junkies shooting up in the corridors, people having sex in the hallway. Just every kind of sort of, you know, character like this that you could imagine. And of course, this landlord, who, as I briefly mentioned, is a complete crook. In that year that I lived there, he was just trying to get him out. So what you might call kind of the old characters, the poor people essentially, were just slowly getting their, you know, being taken to court, getting chucked out. And then by the end of the year and a half, the hallways were all painted and all the graffiti was gone. And, you know, maybe I think I must have seen 5 or 6 flats get chucked out and then, of course, get replaced by a graphic designer from Italy and some Argentinian guy who just rents it on Airbnb, and just like, you know, essentially the gentrifying crowd, if you want to call it that. And then I lived there for a year and a half, and then I've moved this summer fairly recently to a like fully gentrified area. There's no area more gentrified than where I am now. You walk out the door and there's like people riding unicycles, playing the ukulele to each other and wearing berets.
People riding unicycles, playing ukulele to each other, wearing berets. In 2002, urban studies theorist and international celebrity Richard Florida published his book, The Rise of the Creative Class and How It's Transforming Work, Leisure, and Everyday Life, which became this holy grail for urban planners and mayors throughout the world, looking for ways to turn bad or depressed neighborhoods around. Anywhere you look in the world, you can find attempts to attract the artists, the programmers, the people with an idea looking for a place to try it out. And Berlin neighborhoods such as Prenzlauer Berg, Friedrichshain, Kreuzberg are considered successful examples of this. And only a few years ago, it seemed like the new target would be, and still is, Neukölln. Once again, Caroline Marburger.
For many, it has become the one thing that deserves the name up and coming. There are many quarters that have been labeled as such, but sort of wedding is still not there. But Neukölln is sort of considered the sort of hub for the new creative young community. And so at the same time, it always was a social hotspot, so something of a problem quarter for many. And so that mix between the new affluent immigrants of today and the less affluent of the earlier decades makes much of its charm and problems.
So what does the creative class say? We spend so much time talking about them instead of to them. Is working in Neukölln a key factor in making art or doing the work you love to do? I pose this very question to Paul Hawkins.
I mean, I loved it. I absolutely loved that house. For me, it was like living on a mountain of stories, and not a day went by when something weird, just like odd, just really fucking odd would happen. And so as a writer, like, it would, you know, I would just collect all this ammunition for great anecdotes. But on the other hand, it was also kind of scary and kind of dangerous. And in particular, my girlfriend didn't really like it so much. And I think, yeah, for me, I kind of enjoyed the scarier side of it as well. But there was a scarier side of it. There was really a lot of trouble and a lot of fights. But I mean, I'm writing comedy books, so I mean, it's not like none of that stuff is really necessarily good fodder for my work. The human tragedy of that house, but certainly inspires some good creativity, I would guess. I just finished writing a book. 2 days ago, in fact. So I haven't left my house in like a month and a half. I've just been a disgusting sort of horrible shuffling creature in jogging pants and just smelly, awful, drinking, boozing, swearing, caffeinated, just horrible wreck. So I've kind of forgotten what outside is like. But I'm sure when I go out again, you know, tomorrow, I will rediscover some places.
Back on the street now, day had become night, and that brought the extra cold temperatures of Berlin winters, my guide took me past the massive cement apartments of the Ver-Berlin-Straße to Karl Marx-Straße, where gray suddenly turned to colors and lights, and yes, a slightly more this-is-the-place-to-be kind of feeling. And as we walked along this popular street, we found a warm refuge in an almost hidden cafe that was just behind the courtyard, which seemed like it was from a forgotten time, a colonial era, complete with high ceilings painted in gold and fans like we're in 1920s Cairo. A good place as any to bring up the question, who benefits from all this change going on in Neukölln?
Well, I think as I had friends recently who kind of used, intermediately at least, a whole house on Karl-Marx-Straße for some artistic projects. Right now there is still space for exactly that. There's a reason why young artists and programmers and graphic designers and musicians move to Neukölln, because those spaces are around, and I think Neukölln also knows about this, and so you kind of, you know, you're drawn to it. For example, around the corner from here you have Savvy Contemporary, where they just opened a massive former transformation plant into a performance space and have their residence there. And so people that have ideas, as long as they're able to pitch them and have a certain way to get funding, there is a way to do that in Neukölln. So I had a friend ask me lately about places, because she wanted to do an exhibition, and I was like, well, try Neukölln. It's the place to do that, to find places and to find the people that will be willing to, that might have the space for it, and they are willing to do that because they are still those pioneers that have the passion for it. And for that, I understand that why sort of people from all over the world right now are drawn to Neukölln. The kind of people that now live here and are drawn here were drawn to Prenzlauer Berg in the 90s, because anything was possible in Prenzlauer Berg, it seemed at the time. Anything was incredibly affordable, and much more affordable than anything now. And so at some point, of course, it was saturated, and prices grew and clubs moved away, and all those sort of little corners and niches died away. There are still some. And that's the beauty of it, that even in Prenzlauer Berg, there's always a corner and a niche that still keeps going. But of course, Neukölln had a different charm to it. It is former West Berlin. It isn't that completely empty space. It has a sort of history that where the former dwellers are still around, because indeed Prenzlauer Berg, there are of course former people that lived there for a long time that are still around, but it's a very, very young neighborhood. This is too, but it also is young because of the former migrant communities, all the Slesh Germans that now live here that have very many kids. Mm-hmm. And so it's a young quarter also because of that. It's one of the youngest quarters of Berlin, not only because of the new arrivals, but also because of the massive kid community that those sort of families have created. So it's a different kind of story. But in Prenzlauer Berg, usually people bought a flat or maybe a house. And it was usually locals that wanted to use it for their own purposes. Or Americans, or those that use it half of the year. In Neukölln, and that I noticed during my looking for an apartment, was indeed that you have whole blocks built, bought up by one company, by one investor, and then sort of renovated all in one, and then rented out. And so there are many now global players. There was a documentary on Berlin, and it's weird to hear Berlin and Tirana in one breath, but that's that they said these are the hotspots for people selling houses these days, because it's indeed the profit that you can make from investment in housing in Berlin is immense. At least it was over the last 5 years.
Artists seeking affordable space, immigrants from around the world, Berliners who no longer fit in other neighborhoods, and yes, international real estate investors. They're all here or on the way. But how difficult is it to settle here for, say, a busy writer from the UK?
Being part of the EU and being part of the Schengen zone, coming over here to work is incredibly easy. I have friends from Canada and I have friends from Russia, for example, who are also making lives here or trying to make lives themselves here, and the kind of work they have to go through just to do the very basic stuff is incredible. For me, a flat landed in my lap, working here is fine and is, you know, on the books and easy. My girlfriend is German, so I have the advantage of having like a permanent life carer just taking me around, and every time something scary in German confronts me, which is above my level of expertise, I just push her slightly forward and she deals with that. So, I mean, in that sense, it was very, very easy to make a life. There wasn't so many barriers, really. And of course, coming from London, the rent prices are perhaps two or three times cheaper to live in nicer places, in nicer areas. And I think the main reason that people move here, of course, is not that it's so cheap, but because that relative cheapness buys so much relatively. The kind of life you can afford here on smaller money is very different to somewhere like London or New York, for example.
Christian Grasse, you like my semi-German pronunciation, he's a German radio and podcast producer based in Neukölln. Now, among his work is the Neukölln-focused podcast Kiez Radio, which looks at history, places, and personalities in the neighborhood. Now, why an audio podcast? I started with that very question.
Well, I mean, when I came to Neukölln, I think it was seven years ago, obviously... At this time, there was already a lot of things happening, and it seemed at the time that the whole place is changing so quickly, and there's such a big dynamic that I wanted to kind of first of all keep track of it myself to understand what's going on, because so much is changing. I mean, not only this whole gentrification debate, but also because change in general has always interested me, so I kind of was looking for an excuse to talk to people about the change in Neukölln. And then I thought, well, why not doing a podcast and kind of documenting this whole process of, you could call it gentrification, but there's a debate behind it that I don't really like, because I mean, every city and every urban area is changing, I guess. It's because it's full of people, and people tend to do things they do, and so things change, and always I think it's not that interesting for me to always look at the, you know, criticism of things. It's very important to criticize things, but anyway, I just wanted to document the change, but not only from my point of view, but also, of course, from other people's point of view. People who lived in the neighborhood for a long time, who have maybe been born there and lived all their life there, and people who just moved in and are those people who change things. That's what interested me. And I think a podcast is a very, very nice way to document such a change, because it's not so intrusive like when you use a camera and have people, like, you know, visually. And I think when you just talk to people and do it like in an just do a radio, they tend to be more open, I guess. And that's what fascinated me, yeah, to do that. The original idea actually was to kind of record things, people, and places that might not be there in, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4 years, to kind of preserve some stories that might not be being told in a few years' time. That was the original idea. But then I thought it's also difficult to kind of judge, you know. There's also a kind of a judgment behind it. If I say, well, this is worth to preserve and other things are not, so we decided not to do this approach, because there's too much stuff, actually, too many people, too many places, and too many things that are so interesting, and it's very difficult to decide which one you go for. But then we kind of focused on things that change now or that have changed in the past. There was one place I remember, I don't know if you have been there, the Klunkerkranich. It's just the, you know, the top level of the park deck from the Neukölln Arkaden at the U-Bahn Rathaus Neukölln at the U7 U-Bahn station. And this has always been like a secret place. And, you know, people went up there. You can't really go up there because the elevator is only going to the fifth floor where the library is, and then it stops. And there's just a park deck, and there's, you know, it's full of cars, and you don't really know that there's something above there. But a few people knew, and so you could walk up. Not, there were no steps, but you could, you know, go up the spiral where the cars were parking. Then you had to go over, like, there was a chain you could just step over, and then you could walk up another deck, and then you were on the roof. And this has always been some kind of a magical place for only a few people who knew about it, because you have a wonderful view over in Neukölln and over the whole of Berlin, and it's awesome. And, you know, maybe 3 years ago or 4 years ago, this secret wasn't a secret anymore, and more people went up there. And then I think 2 years ago, there was the people from the, they did a bar in the Weserstraße, Fuchs and Elster. They got in touch with the company who owns the park deck, and then they rented the top level and created a bar there and a garden, like an urban small garden project. And when we heard about that, you know, there will be a bar up there and some, I don't know, hipster place, we were very skeptical. And so we got in touch with them and asked if we could go there. And that was the time when they were just started, to build the bar. And we talked to them, and we were quite skeptical. And then, you know, we talked to them for 2 hours, and we realized, well, they're really nice people, and they take such a big effort to kind of pay up to this place, because they know it has always been a secret and it has been such a special place for so many people. So they didn't want to kind of own this place. So they tried to open up and invited the people to, contribute to the place. And I mean, officially it is their place now, because they rent it, and they have their responsibility up there, and they have the, like, they can rule up there, but still they are very open. And their approach to this whole problematic of gentrification and, you know, building up new bars and clubs and all that stuff, their approach fascinated me, because they know about the debate and they were looking for new ways to deal with this problem. And after talking to them for 3 hours and, you know, looking at how they did this whole construction stuff on their own and all DIY and so on, I realized, okay, this is something that I really didn't expect at all. And yeah, that fascinated me, and that also gave me hope for this debate that's going on, that so many people complain about, you know, that there's too many, in quote unquote, bad people who take away our neighborhood. I mean, it can be done in a different way.
Christian, you didn't always live in Berlin, or Neukölln for that matter. Tell us about the chain of events that brought you there.
I grew up in a small town outside of Berlin. And then when I finished school, it was like everyone who was born there, I didn't stay there. And most of the people went to Berlin. And that was, for me, that was 2002. And I went to Friedrichshain. And well, later on, when Friedrichshain became too expensive for us, it was like, I don't know, this whole circle of friends was divided in a way that, you know, half of the people decided they will move to Wedding, and the other half decided to move to Neukölln. And I was really undecided. And then, well, I decided to leave Berlin anyway. And when I came back in 2009, you know, my closer friends, they lived in Neukölln. And then I decided to go to Neukölln. And at that time, it was really, well, a lot different from now. For example, when you were looking for a flat, it was like you had so much... I mean, there were so many places that were empty, and when you wanted to rent a place, you know, when you go for a flat now, there's at least 50 or 60 other people who also want the place, and the rent's going up. And at that time, it was like, I don't know, the people who owned the place, who rented it to you, they gave you, I don't know, €1,000 to, you know, to for paint and to, so you could do your own stuff there, and said, well, the first 3 months are free, but only if you agree to stay here for at least 1 year. You know, that was the deal at the time. And, you could rent a flat, I don't know, a 3-room flat, 70, 80 square meters for, I don't know, 300, 400 euros a month. And those things obviously have changed a lot in the last maybe 4 years, three, 4 years. And because when I came here, it was just before the actual hype started. And that's actually a story we also talked about with the in the latest Kiez Radio with the Freies Neukölln, one of the first bars in the Weserstraße, in, you know, in the Reuter Kiez, which is like the Kreuz Köln area. And because they started their bar 8 years ago, or nine, yeah, 8 years ago, and they were the first like bar for, you know, for the new Neukölln people, for artists and musicians and startup people who just, and students. And they actually only opened the bar because they didn't have a place to go in Neukölln. So they said, well, just why don't we just open up a bar, so we don't have to go to Kreuzberg or Friedrichshain or whatever anymore. And after this bar started, a lot of other bars came, and, you know, then there were newspaper articles about this actual bar and how cool it is. And then, so they started the hype in a way. And now, just at the end of the year, they closed down because they couldn't afford the rent anymore. Because the owner wanted a ridiculously amount of rent. They could have actually paid for, but the owner said, well, I don't want you here anymore. So the bar that actually started the hype closed down because of it. And that's ironic in a way. So they told us the whole story about how they started and what happened during the 8 years. And that was very fascinating, to see how this small urban area, changed, and the idea that it began with seems to be gone. And you know, this idea of having an open space, having a place for different ideas, for different approaches, it seems to be gone.
By now, anyone listening knows the reoccurring themes here. A poor district with lots of space and a low cost of living, an influx of people from many different places, including artists and people of so-called new economy practices who can work from anywhere but seek to live somewhere interesting and are often willing to pay more for the privilege. The neighborhood then becomes too expensive. Former and current residents criticize it, or they fight to stop some of these changes. Many move on to a new, similar scenario. This all starts to feel like a cycle. Some might even say it's the new normal for urban development.
You know, it's really fascinating that this whole the cycle is is so much faster. And it's, I mean, this whole thing happened, of course, in places like I said, in Friedrichshain, in Mitte, in Prenzlauer Berg. But it seems like people who started things in Friedrichshain or in Prenzlauer Berg, it took a lot of time there, and they learned how to, I don't know, start a new bar, start a new whatever. And because they kind of professionalized their doings, it became so much quicker in Neukölln. And I mean, it's really when you leave, because I mean, when you will come back next time, when you will be back in Berlin, things will have changed already. I mean, there's so much new bars opening. It feels like almost every week. I really can't keep track of it anymore. I don't say it's a bad thing. It's just what happens. And because there's so much going on, it feels like people are losing the, you know, the kind of perspective for the whole thing, because they a lot of people seem to have a very narrowed point of view or a very narrow perspective on their neighborhood. That's what worries me a bit. People seem to only care about the place they want to go to, or their special place, because there's, I mean, that's also a good thing, right? Because everybody has a place to go to. There's so many special interest places. I mean, if it's a bar, if it's a co-working space and all that, people live like, I don't know. It seems to me like people started to live next to each other, but not with each other.
In the week that I was there exploring Neukölln and all these themes of change and struggle that came with it, it happens that the district mayor, Mr. Heinz Buschkowski, he steps down. His tenure as a mayor was marked by not so much becoming a hip area, but by his frequent speeches and warnings about integration and relations between neighbors of varying backgrounds. Because, of course, Neukölln is the most multicultural district of Berlin, and quite possibly of Germany.
Neukölln is, with Mitte, the most multicultural district of the whole city. So it has 40% migrants of mostly Turkish, Arab, and Russian background, mostly. But it's like the biggest accumulation of nations actually in the whole city, and so it's, and for Germans, because I think internationally it has more the reputation of the new hyped hub. But in Germany, if you go outside Berlin, sometimes the thing that they connotate, that they think of when they hear Neukölln, is indeed conflict, is social conflict, because there was this big scandal in 2006 about one school where the teachers sort of resigned because they said they could not handle the violence and the problems. And Rüdli School became sort of infamous for that. And it started a whole discussion about how to integrate migrants into the society, which Germany was very late in realizing that it was an immigrant country after all. And that stuck with people. It's sort of what certain districts across the borders of Berlin in Germany have, of course, a certain sound to them. And so today, for a certain generation, definitely Neukölln still stands for the troubles of a lack or misled integration.
I think the what's also special about Neukölln is that there has, maybe in the past 50 years or so, there has never been a group or... I mean, Neukölln has always been changing, because there are a lot of people here from other parts of the world. I mean, I think I think it's, well, it depends how you define foreigners, but I think it's between 20 or 40% of Neukölln, which I always really, really loved, because it's a, there's nothing like it in Germany, I think. And that's what I find so interesting. I mean, when I go out of the door, there's of course Turkish people, there's Russian people next door, there's I think Vietnamese people, and now the latest new group of people is of course a lot of English speaking people, and I think it's nice. I really like that, and people seem to get along well. I mean, when I go out, although the image of Neukölln is not the best when it comes to, you know, violence on the street and all that, but I personally never experienced any bad things. I love it. I mean, I love this diversity of people. The only thing I criticize is that, like I said, I would like it more if people would look after each other more and not just do their own thing.
Again, like I say, I moved in the last 6 months, and so now I am, you know, a normal. I'm so normal here. Like maybe in the house in Neukölln, there was a bit more judgment going on. But I mean, at the same time, I felt like everyone who lived in that house, we were all so involved with each other's lives because the walls were thin and everyone was outside all the time. People would leave their doors open, blasting music out, and there would be like lots of talking in the corridors and stuff and just crazy goings on. But at the same time, as well as us all kind of living on top of each other like that, we were also all living very parallel lives. Like we were kind of united by living in this one building, but you know, people had so little in common. There was like a Turkish family of like 6 or 7 people in one flat on one side, then a guy who's lived there for like 50 years and seen bombs crush the roof and fires over the years. And then above him, there's a guy who's just renting it out on Airbnb. And then now there's like some English writer in one of the flats. And do you know what I mean? So it's like kind of, I think there was judgment, but the judgment was going in all directions. There was like the Polish guy being racist to the German guy and the German guy shouting abuse at the Turks. And like there was definitely judgment going in all directions there. So any judgment thrown at me would have just been, I don't know, somehow normalized. Just, you wouldn't really notice it.
In many debates about the merits of this kind of development, you'll hear the side that says, well, all these creative types coming in, this brings an increase in tax revenue and better schools and facilities. Is that what Neukölln has in store for its residents? I posed this question back at Café Rix to Caroline Marburger.
It is partly happening. So, for example, the school I just mentioned actually has now become a model school of sorts, because not only because of the neighborhood changing, but indeed because of the changes one did after that scandal. So it now has become indeed the role model for how to deal with such a community and trying to have from the very start of school to the very end a sort of same setup, not this typical thinning out of migrants towards the end of the career, so that, because of course the problem is usually that they get lesser degrees, and the very sort of, let's say, old school system that Germany still has with those 3 tiers of different levels, elite levels, let's say, and very often migrant kids being stuck at the lower end of that, trying to have a more unitarian, in a way, approach. It really works out. And of course, the thing that you describe, that sort of gentrifying the profiting part, is true for this section, which some people call the locality of Neukölln or North Neukölln, but Neukölln is a wider district, really, really big, going down south, and the problems that Neukölln was known for are not gone, yet sometimes they have been lessened right here, yeah. But they sometimes have just been moved to those more southern districts and the more modernist 60s, 70s districts, where those social problems still are, and they haven't been really solved. They just have been pushed away.
Doing a program that focuses on Neukölln, you're always aware that this is a very popular topic, having been written about not only in German, but in global media for the past few years. It almost feels overdone. And one thing I wondered was, what aspect a Neukölln local would say is the most overlooked, the thing that people really don't hear about? Once again, Christian Grasse.
Well, first of all, I think it's a very good thing to write about, because it's a very classical situation, because there seems to be a conflict, right? A conflict of interests. It's always something good to talk and write about. But I think they miss the actual everyday life. I mean, whenever you read about this whole gentrification debate, the only thing you read about is, like, I don't know, left-wing people who are aggressively against the gentrification and all that, or you hear about the new success of, I don't know, new bars and new startups who do their thing, or you hear about people who can't afford the rent anymore, or you hear about those terrible house owners who raised the rents and all that. That's actually just a small perspective of the whole picture. I mean, the everyday life is vibrant, is diverse, fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's missing.
I think if you walk around and you ask some of the locals that have been living here for ages, I think there's a very split opinion, but also favorable of the changes. Not, I think it's sometimes the students that of course see the problem that they don't find affordable rooms anymore, but sometimes if you would ask old sort of locals, they might say, like, I don't mind, it's a very weird change these days, but I don't mind that things have cleaned up and that there are now nice cafes around. So I have, it's a very odd theory, it might be completely off limits here, but there is this known term that Berliners use for their neighborhood, Kiez, which derives from some old distinct settlements outside the city, close to the city. And it has been very often used negatively. So there is the Kiez, or half negatively, the Kiez in Hamburg, which is the red light district. But in Berlin, it usually is used to describe a neighborhood that is not necessarily defined by its borders, but more or less it's sort of a neighborhood you live in and the social net that it has. In a way, you have everything you need inside your Kiez. So many people never leave their Kiez, one says, because they have everything they need. Mm-hmm. And so I think here it's sort of tried to describe a certain distinct setting, but also a sort of integrated setting. And that Kiez patriotism, because Berliners usually are patriots of where they grew up, the neighborhood they belong to, not the city. Somewhat it comes with it, but usually they know best about their neighborhood. And I think that feeling that, of course, Berlin is an sort of a big accumulation of villages and small neighborhoods, sometimes serves that purpose, that you have rather, particularly here, more left liberal tendencies, and the idea that you want to do something for the neighborhood, I think is also part of that thing, that Kiez is actually a word that has only been used more and more and more over the last years, because one tries, like, this is this Kiez and this is this Kiez, and I think people start to like the concept.
Yeah, it's still a great place. I mean, there's so much great about it. I mean, and I think if you ask the same question, what is Neukölln going to be doing in 5 years? Well, it's probably going to be Kreuzberg. And then you'll be making your program about Wedding or somewhere else in Berlin. But I mean, yeah, Neukölln has a lot of great stuff going for it. I mean, I still go to Tempelhof regularly. That's a gem of a place for any city to have. Yeah. I think it was the first time where my cynicism about politics melted away in front of my eyes. When I was really looking at this petition popping up here and there and everywhere, and of course signing it, and really having very little hope for its success. And of course that was completely wrong. So yeah, it's a positive story.
The story of Tempelhof Airport, one of the big stories of Neukölln in recent history, is one that is so significant we will dedicate a podcast to it in the near future. But clearly, these three voices are telling us something. They're saying, yes, something is going on here. No, it isn't all rainbows and roses, but there are things here to be inspired by, learn from, and to be a part of.
When it comes to our podcast, one very interesting thing we did is visiting a brewery here in Neukölln. where they brew local beer, and that's something I really like, because I every time I go out I drink this beer, and to know who made it and how it's been made, and you know, just know the guy. Whenever I go drink a beer, I just in front of my inner eye, I see the guy who's brewing the beer, and he's listening loud punk music while he's doing it, and that's something really cool. One podcast we did with also an historian, and we walked along Neukölln, and he told us about the colonialism and the era in which Neukölln was also, of course, part of, and this historic view on places, how they have been shaped 150 years ago, and that was also very interesting, and that would be something I would recommend for everyone to to understand what Neukölln is and Berlin is. People forget that the place they live in, of course, we are all living in the now, but every place has a history, and I think it's important to at least take notice of that, and also look around and talk to people who do things that you do not do.
Christian Krasse is a radio producer and host of Kiez Radio. You can find him at kiezradio.org. Caroline Marburger is a historian and tour guide with berlinlocals.com. And Paul Hawkins is probably showered by now, having completed his latest book, How to Be an Adult, and you can find his writing at hencewise.com. As for the story of Neukölln, well, that story is ongoing. So let's not close the book just yet. There are many chapters to be written. It is and will continue to be a source of inspiration as well as debate. And as this program focuses on open creativity and those living in Berlin, this is certainly not the last we will hear about this rapidly changing neighborhood. That about does it for this edition of Source Code Berlin. Thanks to all those who have commented or just shared the program with your friends and network. Please keep doing that. Source Code Berlin is a Wikimedia Deutschland podcast. Find us at sourcecode.berlin. Follow us on Facebook, Source Code Berlin, or on Twitter, at SRC Code Berlin. Special thanks today to famed chef and Neukölln resident Susie Fracassa for additional research in today's program. Music was by the Blue Dot Sessions and Rocket Max, which you can find on the Free Music Archive. This podcast is published under a CC BY SA 4.0 license and edited by me. Until next time, I'm Mark Fonseca Rendeiro. Thanks for listening.